Good morning, everyone. Time now for the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. I want to thank you very much for joining us. We'll invite your calls right after the top of the hour news. That number, if you want to jot that down now, is 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air and let you air your question live to our guest today. From the Grants Pass City Council, Councilors Rob Pell and DJ Fazer are in studio. And gentlemen, welcome. Glad to have you with us here on this, well, it's a February day. It's February in Southern Oregon. That's the only way I can describe it. Welcome to the microphones of KJO.
Good morning, Chuck. Thank you for having us.
All right, Rob. Well,
thank you, Chuck.
First question, and before I ask that question, I do want to point out that you've had at least four workshops in the month of January. Three in January, one in February that was just yesterday. But in terms of business sessions, not one in 2 months, gentlemen. What were the reasons behind that? Did the city's business go unattended?
I wouldn't say go unattended. We did have a special meeting at a workshop to handle some business mm-hmm. that would have otherwise been handled at a business session. That question would be great to ask the mayor. She structures the agenda, and I'm going to presume that the amount of business that would be required to be on a Wednesday meeting just hasn't piled up enough to legitimize having a business meeting.
Part of it also, too, Chuck, is that some of the things that we need to address, like tomorrow's business meeting or February 21st, we actually, frankly, needed more public input. So that's why we had the public safety forum on January 25th. And that was 3.5 hours of essentially presenting information, teaching the public, and also listening to the public and being taught by the public, in other words. And we needed to have that before we could move forward.
Oh, I understand it. And I also realize that it's not like you guys have been hiding from the public. You have been putting in some time. I do appreciate that, but it was a question I had to ask without a business session in that amount of time. In the meantime, moving forward, we're running a story today here on KJO Radio about accessory dwelling units and what is available through the city now in terms of plans. And what kind of interest are you seeing in accessory dwelling units?
We're seeing a big swell in applications for accessory dwelling units.
Really?
And also applications for middle housing. I think that's where the conversation really turns. Accessory dwelling units were a really good idea to respond to our housing needs, but really what I foresee is making a difference here in the community as far as our housing needs is middle housing, right? Middle housing and ADUs go alongside with each other, but the middle housing code has a much larger breadth of ability to create density inside the city limits.
All right, let's deal with the middle housing in just a moment, but ADUs, because initially I thought my information was that there was very little interest in the accessory dwelling units initially, and we even had some plans out early for them, did we not?
We did.
And now you say that's swelling?
Yes, we did. Now, I would substantiate that by saying it takes time for developers and people that would be interested in ADUs to learn about those codes and to wrap their minds around them and be able to truly apply them. But yes, I've seen an uptick in them both across the board.
Do we have hard numbers?
I don't have hard numbers for you today.
You know, I'd like to add to that, Chuck. There's when DJ says that it takes time for everyone to kind of wrap their head around or even to know what the term means, accessory dwelling, ADU. You know, in the last 20 years, just as a private citizen, not when I haven't been on the council, I mean, I've created 3 ADUs at different properties that I've had, and sometimes it just takes looking at the property with that in mind, because 2 of the properties had a driveway that went all the way to the back of the property, you know, easy access to the backyard. 2 of them actually had buildings already out there. There was a shop in one of them. There was another outbuilding. I'm thinking, well, this just, you know, looking at it from my perspective, it just, you know, I look at that as a potential place for someone to live, and it was far enough away from my own house on those properties where we put up a fence and everything was great. So sometimes it just takes people to know that the possibility exists and look at their property through that lens. And as they get older and their kids aren't playing in the yard anymore, hey, why not have an extra $500 or $1,000 a month coming in and create some additional housing, and it really has very little downside at that point.
All right, so we're looking at really improving the housing situation in Grants Pass, which has been horrible for the past few years. Occupancy rate, what, at 90, close to 99%. So if people, you can't move into town if you can't find a place to live. So let's continue with that. Now, define for me what we're talking about when we say middle housing, middle-income housing, basically. What are the parameters there? And I understand the legislature just changed everything.
So in a nutshell, middle housing allows for higher density application in low density zoning. It's essentially allowed for high density in traditionally zoning R1 areas. It allows you to put up to four units on an R18 lot, for example. It allows you to, in the ADU, for example, it allows for creating a postage stamp property around an ADU, which then becomes a legal tax lot that's marketable for sale. So ADUs and middle housing run hand in hand, but I foresee the conversation going less away from describing it as ADUs and more talking about it as far as middle housing goes, because middle housing even makes ADUs a more marketable product, more realistic product to produce.
Middle income housing now. How is the council involved in that in terms of encouraging it to happen here, and define exactly what it is? If I'm in an R1, and if we're talking about I've retired, I've come out, I've picked up my little piece of land here, I built my house on it, and I've got some seclusion, but right next door suddenly multi-unit housing going up. Is that what is happening?
That's correct. Yes, it gives blanket allowance for density on R1 tax lots. So yes, in that example, yes, that could potentially happen. Now, there's a limit to the density that you can put. You're not going to see high density housing on low density zoning, but it does allow for higher density than was traditionally allowed for properties that are zoned R1.
All right. What is the council's action on here right now? Are we being ruled by the state, or do you have some action that you can, do you have to move on something here?
There's actually quite a bit of liberty that the council has under middle housing to respond to it. In fact, we had a workshop yesterday with Home Builders Association, and council determined that there are so many code adjustments that need to happen to respond to middle housing that we've decided that we need to create a committee of experts that can look into our code to change it to allow for what we're calling now the new way of building things. And those conversations are going to happen in earnest very soon.
All right, so we're just going to create a committee. We don't have the structure for that committee yet, or even how to apply for it if you're interested or qualified for it.
Well, another thing about that is, though, the council also talked about there's still work that's readily identifiable that can be done in the meantime. I don't think our intention is to sit in, I think, what Rob described as a moratorium of progress and wait for the committee to do that. There are readily identifiable issues that the council can respond to create code that's accommodating to middle housing, and I think we intend on working on those things.
You know, and just, you know, and just to elaborate a little bit on that, and I actually love sitting next to DJ and hearing him talking about housing, because for me it's a master course. This is what he does, so I learn every time I hear him speak. But we also took two actions yesterday that are going to facilitate easier and increased densities and less red tape and less problems, more straightforward pathway to increased densities. We took two small actions yesterday. So at the same time that we're going to establish a committee to look at some of the gray areas and some of the more complex issues, some of the low-hanging fruit, we'll say, is pretty black and white. There's just older code out there that doesn't mix or mesh well with some of the newer goals that both the state and the city have as far as increasing densities. So about a year ago, the council decided that we were going to meet every 2 months with interested parties, the home builders and other builders in the community, to have a back and forth with them, to have a staff, you know, our staff experts in the room with home builders and so forth in the room, so council could hear both sides of whatever struggles or challenges are out there. And so we've been, you know, every couple of months, we've been actually having a dialogue or trying to have a dialogue with the things that the home builders have brought in. So, yes, we're going to have a committee to a blue chip committee, we'll say, that's going to look at things that are really challenging. But the low hanging fruit, we're moving on them.
All right. Well, let's talk about the low hanging fruit. if you look at the just the geography of the area, you might think that land might be limited. But from some of the conversations we've had here in this very room, there is plenty of land out there to develop. Is that correct?
I wouldn't say plenty of land. I would say land buildable lands inventory is certainly an appreciable hurdle as far as building and developing, right? But, you know, things like ADUs and middle housing open up opportunity for infill projects. And I would anticipate seeing quite a few of infill projects utilizing those new codes for density. So when you take all things in consideration and the potential implications of middle housing, we can get closer to saying, yeah, we have some land. But in my opinion, we're far away from having, quote-unquote, plenty of available buildable lands inventory.
DJ, can you define infill for the listeners?
Sure. Infill is a property surrounded by a development that has yet to be developed. It's you have a home on either side, an empty lot that hasn't been able to be developed for really any reason. And so infill is basically spotted lots that have not been developed inside of previously developed areas.
All right. Going back to what Rob was talking about with those monthly, every 2 month meetings with this Blue Ribbon Committee, including a Home Builders Association. I understand that we've not had that meeting with the Home Builders Association for, what, 4 or 5 months now?
The last meeting that we had was in October. Mm-hmm. We had one scheduled in December, and we had to push it out to February. The reasons for pushing back had nothing to do with the unwillingness of council to discuss these things. The reasons behind that were we had to have thorough conversations about public safety, for example. And so that was a good thing that we did. But at the end of the meeting, I had talked with the mayor in the structuring of the agenda to actually make up for time lost expected from the home builders and council, perhaps having a meeting in March and April. So that way we can catch up to what that timeline was expected and then get back to our sort of two-month cadence, if you will.
Okay. In the meantime, the things that the council can do immediately to begin the process, to begin the expansion, to begin creating some middle development, what needs to be done right now to rubber stamp it, just drop the green flag and say go?
We have to get the players in the room to talk about those things. Those conversations are starting very soon. The home builders have provided a list to council and staff. It's about 22 items long and growing that have been readily identified that the council could enact on a policy level that would help with development. And the goal of getting together every 2 months is to take those in order of priority and work on them. We can't do it all at once, but I do believe that the list is there and that council has shown willingness to chip away at them.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here. We've already alluded to public safety, and we'll pick up that topic when you come back right after this word.
Do you want to contribute?
Welcome back, everyone. Glad to have you with us here, City Council in studio today with the Tuesday Talk Show. Councilors Rob Pell and DJ Fazer are in studio today, and we alluded to just real briefly public safety funding, and that's coming up on the agenda tomorrow night. I think it's about fourth on the council action area. But we've been talking about this for a long time. Where do we stand right now with public safety funding? I know the situation has been put up where right now the council was at last report looking at a reduced utility fee along with a 2% sales tax. Is that where we still stand? What is the public saying to you about those two areas, and what do you see the council direction moving in? Either one of you.
Well, I think that there seems to be, and I'm one councilor, but it seems to be a consensus, and I think that this came from really listening to the public, that we really, for the most, the majority of council does not want to reduce current levels of service. They are a little bit, we have less policemen than we had, say, in 2019. I don't think that council wants to reduce levels of service, which with the current $1.79, as we move forward with inflation and so forth, that is what would end up happening. So I think in part the survey that the council put out in December made that pretty clear, that while the public had difference of quite varied opinions on how to potentially fund public safety or how to increase funding if we needed to do that, I think the vast majority did not want to reduce service. So I think the majority of the council is clear on that. I think the rest of it is pretty still way completely up in the air and very negotiable, subject to conversation.
All right, maintaining a level of service.
Would you agree with that, DJ?
I tend to agree with you. Yes, yeah. I do. I think a really important point for everybody to understand about this circumstance currently is if we do not find a new revenue stream or more revenue, we will have a reduction of level of service that will manifest in loss of service, right? So that's really where we're at. If we don't get more money, we will have to reduce service. And because our property taxes are frozen, the 179 is established for 5 years, and there's no more money left in the general fund to supplement public safety services. So that's at the far lower end of this spectrum. If council does nothing, if council doesn't garner service, we will lose police officers.
As I understand it, with how this conversation has progressed over the years, the last I heard was this proposal of the increased funds would not only maintain that level, but increase the level of boots on the ground, both for fire and police. Is that accurate? Is that still what we're looking for? Are we just looking to maintain where we're at?
Well, sure. There's a spectrum in this conversation. There's the far end extreme of doing nothing and not having revenue and losing service. And then at the other end of the spectrum, it is the full and complete all position ask of staff for 29 positions across fire, police, and parks over a 5-year term. And I think anything in between those is still open for conversation. But I'm going to say again, I do agree with Rob that I don't think there's anybody on council that is willing to entertain doing nothing and reducing the level of service. So in my opinion, that's sort of a theoretical bottom, right? But not a very realistic bottom.
We're looking at an increase of on the public safety fee, about $12 is what the last proposal that I saw, about $12 per single family household. On top of that, a 2% sales tax would provide enough revenues to even add some boots on the ground. And that seemed to be the council position for a while after the survey came out. Is that still the council position? Is that what we're going to move forward on? Or we're still changing things right now?
Well, that's the million-dollar question right there.
That's my job.
There are some on council that have put their cards on the table. For example, my position is I'm opposed to enacting a transactional tax without getting the approval of the people to do so. That being said, I am also willing to look into a marginal increase in utility to do what is necessary so that we at the very least can maintain current level of service, which you're correct is approximately $12 on the utility fee. That being said, extrapolated over 5 years, the cost of maintenance of that service is going to increase by $2 to $2.5 million annually. So even if we did that maintenance of current level of service, it's going to be $12 the first year, $16.5 the second year, $24 the third year, approximately. So we can expect to even see that number increase just for maintenance.
All right. And is that without a sales tax?
That's without a sales tax.
Okay.
That's without a sales tax. Correct. And then to do utility fee only for a 9-position growth, which council did give sort of tacit approval to, and only utilizing a utility fee, that's going to look more like $17 the first year and increasing accordingly, increasing at a steeper rate, if you will. That's where we get into the conversation of, can the utility rate payers shoulder that increase? Then the conversation matures into what are the other possibilities of garnering new revenue. The two most popular at this point, as far as council discussion goes, is a general sales tax and a food and beverage tax.
All right, Rob, you want to weigh in on this?
Well, I agree with everything that DJ just said. And, you know, keeping in mind that we said the two most popular, these are the two that have not been cut, have not been taken off the table so far. A payroll tax, council immediately decided that wasn't a place we wanted to go, even though Eugene just, I think, enacted one of those. So those are two possibilities, the consumption taxes. But, you know, the issue becomes, while $17 doesn't sound like much, we get probably one of the hottest items or one of the hottest subjects that we've gotten emails over in the last year are, and I'm going to just, you know, kind of characterize caricaturize. We get, you know, emails from little old ladies who are, you know, at home, say that they take, you know, do two loads of laundry a week and they stop watering their lawn, and they're still, their water bill is still $100 a month. So, you know, that's where we're at on our utility bills right now.
All right, my utility bills have gone up significantly in the last 5 years. There's no question.
And we're, you know, we're getting up there, and the ability for the general public to you know, shoulder another increase there or a series of increases over the next 5 years is really problematic.
We're coming up to, we're a little bit short on time here, so I've got about a minute and a half left. In the current agenda packet put out for tomorrow night's meeting is a level of an outline of what a public sales tax would look like with some exemptions. That's outlined there. Have you seen those? Do you concur with those? I didn't see any caps listed, but I went over it real briefly. Where does that stand right now in terms of a sales tax?
We haven't had an appreciable conversation about exclusion quite yet. There's a 150-page document from the state of Washington that talks about exclusions and exclusions that they use. So that conversation is a bear that, in my opinion, hasn't quite begun yet.
So that hasn't begun yet. Whereabouts are we in this process? Now, I know the council has the authority to institute a sales tax and the utility fee without a public vote. And DJ, you've already said you're against doing that without a public vote. If we do that, there are rumors that there will be a public vote by referendum. So will the council move on this soon? What is the status here in your opinion, Rob? How do you see the council moving right now?
Well, as you mentioned, Chuck, the fact that there can be a public vote makes me would allow, I believe, the checks and balances needed, even if the council enacted, unilaterally enacted one of these taxes. I actually could potentially, that's still, put it this way, I'm still considering that as a potential because I know that the public still would have the final say. So it wouldn't be taxation without representation. The public can still weigh in on that. It's just a question, do they weigh in before or after? So I don't feel horrible about the possibility of enacting such a tax because the public could still have, will still have the final say.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be back right after the top of the hour news. You're listening to KAJO Grants Pass.
Want a tester?
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show continues. Ladies and gentlemen, we have two city councilors in studio today. Rob Pell and DJ Fazer are both here, have answered our call this morning. So if you're interested in asking a question or presenting a comment to our councilors, the number to call is 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment. And, gentlemen, stimulating conversation so far. We've been talking about public safety was our last topic going into the top of the hour news. In that vein, we're talking about at least not losing boots on the ground. We've talked about the public safety utility fee. We've talked about the 2% sales tax. Well, we have a call coming in. Let's go right to that call. Good morning. You have a question or comment for a guest this morning? Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry. I'm wondering how this all works with the new water treatment plant that's got to come on board and escalating costs.
Sure. That's an excellent question. Council needs to be aware of the bandwidth, the capability of the rate payer. And current strategy to satisfy a bond for a water treatment plant is the rate payer. I think we can expect what's called a guaranteed maximum price for the water treatment plant, hopefully sometime in October, September, October, which is truly going to give us the information that we need about what is this water treatment plant going to cost. But you're correct. We need to be aware of that bandwidth or capability otherwise of the ratepayer to shoulder both public safety and a water treatment plant.
Does that help, sir?
Well, I've heard about there was potential for grants from either federal or state to pay part of that cost. What's that look like?
It's looking quite promising that we will be awarded what's called the BRIC grant, which could come somewhere close to $55 million of federal grant money to assist in paying for that water treatment plant, which, in my opinion, is an absolute necessity if we are going to get a new water treatment plant. But currently, it's looking good. It looks like we're a primary candidate for that, and We can't fully rely on it until we have the money in the bank, but it's looking very good at this point.
Yeah, I believe, actually, we've been approved for that program. The question, we're just waiting to hear the amount that we're going to receive. Last year, we actually were rejected for, we had some really minor, bookkeeping reasons. But we've been approved. The question is, now we're going to be finding out how much we're going to receive.
So that's your question, sir.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, what's the last cost estimate you've gotten on that treatment plan? Is it over $100 million?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's over $100 million. I think $113-ish was the was recent estimate that went up from 80-something as early as 4 years ago.
Right, okay. Big money.
It's big money.
All right, thank you very much, sir.
Right.
All right, so we've been approved for the grant that could be as high as $55 million, which is not quite half. What about the other half?
We're going to have to borrow the money. We're going to have to bond for that money, okay. And we're going to have to pay it back, sure.
Okay. It doesn't grow on trees, does it?
Well, our rate built into our rates right now is some payment for that plant. In other words, it's not like we're starting from point zero. I'm trying to remember what year it was that council started. Socking away money for that.
I know it's been saving for a long time.
What year was that? But it was for at least 5 years, I think. That's been part of the reason we've had the rate increase is to pay for the water treatment plant. So we're not starting at ground zero on that.
Sure. Recent conversations and my understanding about that is that at this point it's a realistic potential that we won't see an increase in rates above and beyond what's already been approved for that water treatment plant, given that we're awarded the BRIC grant, for example.
Okay. When do we expect to know? Is there a timeline on that BRIC grant?
Best case. Oh, for BRIC grant. I'm sorry. I don't know the exact answer to that question.
I was expecting that sometime relatively soon, like in the next 6 months. That's what we were told several months ago that we should be hearing. I thought it was spring of this year.
I wanted to go back to public safety funding before we put that one away here, because we've talked about the utility increase and a 2% sales tax was the last general plan, and that's still up in the air from what I understand. When you say sales tax in this town, we know how much the last one went down for, in terms of, I think, over 80% voted against it. But there is a very vocal group out there against it. Is that coming primarily from commercial businesses? And believe me, I'm on a commercial business side here because we rely on commercial businesses to keep this radio station going. But are we hearing just from the loudest group out there, or is that pretty widespread, the resistance to a sales tax?
Right now, you know, I've spent 6 or 7 hours right now going door to door downtown, talking to local small merchants and so forth. And right now, we're hearing from the loudest segment. I think at the ballot, we heard last time from everyone else, mm-hmm. and they made up the 80%. So right now, it's the loudest segment because, quite frankly, a lot of people don't pay close attention. They're not even sure. They haven't even heard yet that this is a consideration. But It's as you say, you know, around here we heard 80%. Now, Brian D. LaGrange made a great point at the forum. The last time it was on the ballot, it was roughly 3%, and that would have been divided almost 50-50 with the county.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact is, the sales tax are collected in the city. It would have just been a gift to the county because there's not many businesses out there. We can do with much less sales tax if we're just worried about the city public safety. Who don't need the 3%. So that's the biggest difference between now and this particular tax proposal and what went out to the people. Now, whether that's going to make the difference in an 80-20 defeat is, you know, the $8 million question.
But yeah. No doubt. Yeah. But we've been talking about this for years, quite frankly, and we're at the point where the line is almost drawn in the sand. We've got budgets to consider. When do we have to have a decision made on this, put before the public or instituted by the council? How soon does this have to happen? Is it before the end of the fiscal year?
It absolutely is before the end of the fiscal year. The end of the fiscal year is essentially, that's ground zero. That's when the current budget goes away. And so we have to make a decision in the next couple of weeks to be able to have the lead time necessary to implement any one of these things. And the simplest one to implement is the utility fee. Even to get that implemented by June 1st with the financial year ending June 30th, we've got to decide essentially in the next 2 weeks.
And I think it's really important to understand that the decision needs to be made, not the actual implementation. Our finance director can structure a budget over a codified decision of council.
Right. Well, that's what we're looking for, is the decision to be made. It wouldn't probably go into effect until earliest at the beginning of the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We're going to take just a deep breath right now. We'll be right back after this word. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. If you have a question or comment, the number 541-472-1270 for our guests, DJ Fazer and Rob Pell, Grants Pass City Councilors here. Tomorrow night, a business session coming up in the agenda for the business session is an ordinance amending the Development Code Article 22, Residential Development Standards. DJ, can you outline what that is, put that in real terms for us? Yeah, you want to?
I read it yesterday.
What kind of changes are we looking at? Do you have a general idea right now?
I'm not able to totally respond to that question at this point.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. I understand that there was going to be some changes to, I want to say, codes depending on where you were. Where you were building. Let's see, I want to say, and I'm in gray area here where I'm certain I don't have expertise, but we're looking at streets that are official streets or just privately owned streets where meters may be put in, that sort of thing.
Are you talking about the decision based on yesterday?
Yes.
Yeah, yesterday's decision was to write code that allows for public utility, specifically water, to go up private streets.
Mm-hmm.
So currently, your meter needs to front the public road adjacent, which creates which creates theoretically tens or dozens of water lines that run hundreds of feet to a house up a private road. And currently, the city allows for sewer, actually requires sewer go up a private road. And in some instances, they're required to put water mains for fire hydrants up those roads. And so it was pretty easy to connect the dots that that water lines for hydrants and sewers are required, but water is not allowed. And so what council did is it tasked Public Works with coming up a code that allows for public water service to go up into private roads and have meters on those private properties adjacent to the dwelling units.
And does the cost for that really go to the builder or the homeowner?
The cost for installing would be on the developer's shoulders.
Right, right. So.
Yes, yes. And then cost for maintenance of public utilities is on the city, as it would be for sewer. But then it would be just a regular circumstance that the customer is required, is responsible for repairs on their service, just like sewer system.
All right, Rob, look, you were readily studying there. Did you want to weigh in on that?
I was just offering the place in the packet. The DJ to this part?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is what's from tomorrow night. The solar setbacks and...
The solar setbacks were just above what's called Scrivener's errors. That's really just cleaning house on the new code that we adopted. We found
fixing the language.
Exactly. We found some inconsistencies that are basically just language in the code that more aligns with the intent of the change.
All right. What Rob just brought up to put in front of DJ was their packet for tomorrow night, which, if I recall, is about 400 pages. It's a little over an inch thick. So that's the amount of reading you do prior to any business meeting, any business session. Is it always that thick, or is this average?
Anytime we have development code changes or TPMC changes of the like, we're required to put the code inside of the packet. So it's a little deceiving that there's 400 pages. There's a few dozen in there that are demonstrative of the change that's happening, but we need to have the whole chapter in the change.
So you don't have to read the whole inch and a quarter of whatever we have here.
Correct.
Sometimes there's packets that could be 800 or 1,000 pages.
Yeah, I've seen those, yeah.
But yeah, it's typically there's, as DJ says, maybe 12 pages. Sometimes there could be 35 pages that are actually applicable to what we really need to know for a given meeting.
All right. We kind of put you on the spot here to begin this program when we pointed out that you hadn't had a business session for almost 2 months, but we did say that you'd had several workshops. How much time do you put in reading, preparing for a meeting in your duties? Rob, you've said you spent hours out talking to people. DJ, I know that you're heavily involved in other areas with your city council duties. How much time do you guys really put in on a weekly or monthly basis? Is there an estimate?
I'd estimate somewhere close to 20 hours a week, sometimes more, sometimes less, but I think that would be a fair estimate average.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that it varies a lot because there could be weeks, or if I'm lucky, there could even be a month where it's not a lot of time needed, and there's other times when it's pretty intense, whether it's talking to the public, whether it's reading, whether it's talking one-on-one to other counselors. Sometimes, you know, making four phone calls to four different counselors to get their viewpoint, that can be 2 hours, you know, and you learn more from their viewpoint and the constituents that speak to them. So it varies a lot, and it's I try, you know, not to be overwhelmed or negative when I'm at home. If someone calls me with a problem, I try not to let my family know that I've got a problem on the phone. I try to compartmentalize as much as possible.
All right. I understand. You just don't answer the phone saying, what?
Yeah. Right.
Let's see. Tip of the hat, gentlemen, for putting in the time that you do have. Rob, your phrase was sometimes it's not as intense as others. Is this an intense time?
Yes.
Everybody's nodding.
Objectively, yes.
Yes,
okay. This is a very intense time. There's truly wrapping your mind around this revenue crisis we have with public safety takes a lot of effort and a lot of understanding and many hours to truly understand it. And council has done a very good job in trying to get all the information required out to the public. That all the information is there on the Grants Pass website. If you work your way through all that information, you will eventually truly understand it, but it's going to take time.
You know, one thing I'd like to add, too, is, and I used to say this as a joke, but it becomes, to me, more and more obvious that it's accurate. It's not really a joke only, is that a lot of people feel, I believe almost everyone feels, the only fair tax is the tax on someone else. And you've got so many different factions who have really valid and accurate points as to why their group is will be harmed the most by whatever action we take. And you know what? They're all accurate. Now the question is, as counselors, what do we do? How do we balance all that? And there's no way that that's easy. You know.
All right. Rob, you've said that you kind of protect your family. You kind of isolate and compartmentalize all of that. How about you, DJ? Is this job worth it? There you go.
If you ask me, has this been an enjoyable experience heretofore? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. Being involved with my community and doing things to make our community a better place has been a truly enjoyable experience. Is it difficult at times? Yes. But it's... There's great benefit to being this involved, and yes, it does take work, but I'm not afraid of work.
Right. Well,
you know, one thing I'd like to add, as a small business owner, a retail business owner, I'll just tell you that I've lost a lot of business over a lot of different issues. I mean, I may have gained some, but there's no doubt that there are some people who have boycotted my business over some of my positions, and you know, fair or not, that's just human nature. And, you know, anyone who's a small business owner who wants to get involved in the council, I tell you straight up, you know, it's gratifying and it needs to be done by somebody. It needs to be done. That's one of the reasons I stepped up, because I felt I probably could do it. But there's a price to pay as well.
I know there's certainly a time commitment involved. We talked about 20 hours and taking probably most of a Monday afternoon for the workshops that has really expanded recently. So what do you need to hear from the people, and how do you need to hear from them? Overriding concern right now is public safety and the funding for it. What do you need to hear, and who do you need to hear from?
Tell you what I don't need to hear or really want to hear is I don't want to hear people accusing us of either being doing insufficient work or not having a not being fair-minded or being biased or being, you know, too right-wing or too left-wing or whatever. That's what I don't need to hear because it's not positive. It doesn't move us towards a solution. But anyone that's got something that's well thought out, that's not accusing any particular group or council, I absolutely want to hear that.
All right. DJ, how about you?
I need to hear from my colleagues about their position of the funding mechanism for public safety. Now is the time to put the cards on the table. This community deserves to know where the council is. You asked us, where is council? Rob and I were not able to answer that question. It is now the 11th hour. It is time to play your position and see where the cards fall.
Okay, so you need to hear from your cohorts on the council. What about your public? What about your constituents?
Any and all conversations about anything we do, particularly public safety at this point, is I'm pining for it. Any conversation at all, whether it is me being able to inform the public about what we're dealing with or the opinions of the public about what we're dealing with, is at this point and has been the most important conversation that we can have. Community involvement and a well-informed vote is a precious thing.
How do I contact you? How do you want to receive that information? Is it email? Is it a phone call? Is it a one-on-one communication? What's the best way to reach and really give you vital information?
Any and all of those vehicles are welcomed. I read all the emails that I receive from constituents and answer as many phone calls as possible at the time, and my response rate is pretty good. To say that I'm open to those conversations utilizing any of those vehicles is an understatement.
I really appreciate it when people email the entire council because I really appreciate that I'm not the only one that hears certain information. I'd like the whole council to get people's views, and that way I don't go into a meeting with my own skewed or inside information or more information than someone else. So sending to mayorcouncil@grantspassoregon.gov is a great way, or the telephone or my personal email. That's fine, too.
All right, I'm down to my final 2 minutes here, and we've had some great conversations today, but I'm not sure we've gotten any answers on anything, and I think that's what the council is really struggling to find out right now. So, ladies and gentlemen, your input is certainly invited. DJ, what should people take away from today's program here?
Inform yourself on the revenue issues that we're having with public safety. That right now, if you do anything, is, in my opinion, the most important thing a constituent can do at this point.
I think also to understand, too, why we're at where we're at. I mean, public safety costs are going up much higher than the rest of City Hall payroll. You know, PERS for public safety people is higher because they retire earlier. Workman's comp for public safety is higher because their job is more dangerous. So basically, it's not that anyone is really wrong here locally. It's the fact that public safety costs are just going up way higher and way faster than our 3% property values do every year.
All right, gentlemen, I want to thank you very much. If you have any final thoughts, I've got about 50 seconds left if you want to weigh in and tell people to come to tomorrow night's meeting at the City Council Chambers.
The most important takeaway for anybody that's not aware of this circumstance is if the council does not garner more revenue, that will manifest in loss of police officers. That right there is probably the most important understanding at this point.
1,000% agreed. Thanks for saying that.
All right. Gentlemen, we want to thank you very much for your time today. We do appreciate your efforts here on behalf of KAJO Radio. So, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we encourage you to attend, or then you can even view it online, the Grants Pass City Council meeting tomorrow evening beginning at 6 p.m. in City Council Chambers at 101 Northwest A Street. And easy to find. Just click on the city's website. It will guide you to where you can watch it right online. You're listening to KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon, AM 1270, 99.7 on the FM band, and all around the world on KAJO.com. When you're